I started off a career in the army. I went up about halfway. I went to our staff college and everything. I was involved in two things. In flying, I flew helicopters, commanded helicopters in the Falklands in the second half of 1982. And I also was chief of staff for our intelligence system in the Far East for a time. When I left, I went and ran an aeroplane company called Pilatus Britten Norman that had aeroplanes all over the world. I then was chairman of a company that did various things worldwide. And I then became the Police and Crime Commissioner for the Thames Valley. So I've had a fairly wide background.
Now, we're talking today about banking fraud, particularly. But can you tell us, I mean, Lloyds specifically, and also, of course, Bristol here in Castle Park, this massive new redevelopment that it's all been knocked down now, but that's where the BSU was. But can you tell us about your previous experience when it comes to banks behaving badly?
Well, when I was the Peace and Crime Commissioner of Thames Valley, we came across a very large fraud out of basically H. Boss Lloyds out of Reading. It was a massive fraud. I don't know the full amount involved, but it was getting on for £1 billion. Certainly, I believe it was north of 800 million. We prosecuted on 245 million. I think, understandably, if you prosecuted on too long, the court case would have taken months and the jury wouldn't have understood it. But those who were absolutely directly involved got sentences, I think five of them, for 48 years or something. They were heavy sentences.
So, sorry, is that a total of all of them put
Yes, that
together?
was the total. They were long sentences. They were sort of 8 or 9 year sentences, yes.
Yeah, but you've just said something there, you slipped it in, that actually the fraud was much bigger, but that was more difficult to prosecute, so you decided to drop it.
Well, I think if you prosecute on the full fraud, as said, you might well, the jury would be there for months. They might well not understand it. They might get off. So we only prosecuted on part of the fraud, which you can see both sides of that argument. I
Yes, you
actually had to.
can, yeah. But okay, so how was that fraud operating? What exactly were they up to?
Well, it was the destruction of companies. I mean, there were a number of ways. I mean, one of the ways that I've seen, I think, and this is right across the country, this is not just H. Boss Reading, which I think was a fairly small one. Don't forget, H. Boss Reading had been owned for 9 years by Lloyds Bank. I think it was 8.5 years or something. I mean, one of the classic ways of doing it is a good company, whether it's or a big farming enterprise or something, wants to expand, put up new barns, put up, spill money on R&D, open a new factory. They borrow money and they wait until the bank was waiting until that loan had been all signed up, the money was committed, and the bank would then pull the loan. And very often there were very false guarantees, there were forged signatures, there were all sorts of things going on to bankrupt companies and basically steal the assets. And that seems to have gone on a national
Surely there's
basis.
no point in a bank doing that, because if they sit and wait, they will be getting interest and they will be getting more money back, and the business will carry on.
No, I think the banks were in a hurry to get money. They'd done some very, very foolish things. They had to be bailed out, if you remember, by the government on a huge scale. Both banks had to be both H. Boss and Lloyds had to be bailed out by the government. They were desperately trying to recover money from anywhere they could find money at that stage. And also, I think a lot of the bank managers or senior people in the banks were lining their own pockets because a lot of this money goes overseas. And if you or I suddenly get a large sum of money into our bank account, the bank wants to know straight away, money laundering, where's it come from? And all of this goes on. If a bank moves 100 million between about four sort codes in a morning, and they involve Jersey, the Cayman Islands, and Switzerland, nobody knows about it at all. And the movement of money by banks is totally unrestricted, as far as I can see.
Now, you're saying Lloyds owned H. Boss. Now, that's not what I understand. H. Boss, by the way, stands for Halifax Bank of Scotland. These, I thought, Bank of Scotland and Lloyds were two separate businesses.
They've got this RBS and HBOS, were different banks.
Oh, right. So HBOS is not Halifax Bank of Scotland. It's something else.
Yes, it was the Halifax Bank of Scotland. It was owned by Lloyds.
Ah, but not by the Bank of Scotland.
No.
It's a bit confusing,
There
isn't
were
it?
two big Scottish banks, the Royal Bank of Scotland and the Bank of Scotland, or the Halifax Bank of Scotland, HBOS and RBS.
Okay, completely separate banks.
RBS is now a part of, it calls itself the Westminster Bank, and HBOS is part of Lloyds.
Now, you're implying people were using this money for their own purposes. Now, that again, have you got evidence for that? Why should that be? I mean, surely people are getting maybe a bonus for bringing in lots of money for HBOS,
I think
but
it went a lot further than that, and certainly in the HBOS Reading case, it went a hell of a lot further.
yeah. So, what evidence do you have that individuals are
Well,
using
in the
this
HBOS,
for their
and
own
I say
purposes?
HBOS Reading, don't forget it was Lloyds HBOS Reading. They'd owned it for several years. The evidence was fairly conclusive, and well, totally conclusive, and the jury convicted.
Yeah, but can you just detail? I mean, what were these bankers? How did you have evidence that the bankers were lining their own pockets? What were they doing with the money?
I can't go through the court case. It was several years ago, but it was very, very clear they were lining their own pockets. And I don't think a lot of people who lined their pockets were actually ever prosecuted. I think only a small number were. But what was quite clear, that a huge amount of money disappeared into bankers' pockets and wasn't necessarily going back to the bank itself. And that was shown in front of a jury. And I mean, it took, I think the case took about 2 months in court. And it was fairly complex, but it came out absolutely conclusively, and the jury understood it.
So, what you're describing here is a process by which the bank is saying, it seems, to its staff, well, look, if you can bring X amount of money into our bank accounts and you can take these businesses off people by whatever means necessary, then you will get some sort of personal reward for it. So, that's the kind of incentive that most businesses do allow, but obviously they're not necessarily saying you should be committing fraud.
I think that is probably the case, yes. I mean, the sheer scale of the forgery of documentation has been quite extraordinary across the board. False only bank guarantees signed when people weren't even in this country, they couldn't possibly have signed them. Bank accounts opened up in people or company names that the company wasn't even aware about, lent huge sums of money at very extortionate rates of interest. So the company didn't even know the bank accounts existed. And this, I mean, it's fairly complex because there were so many ways of doing it. But what was quite clear is that certain banks were being totally dishonest.
Now, this all carried on allegedly here in Bristol at the Lloyds BSU. What do you think has been going on there?
Well, from the sheer number of companies and people that have complained about what was going on in Bristol, it appears to have been going on a far larger scale out of Bristol than it was out of Reading. And I don't think it was just out of Bristol. It was also happening out of London, out of Gresham Street, out of Gogo Bank in Scotland with RBS, and out of Leeds. So it seems to have been systemic within two or three of our major banks.
Now, obviously, if people believe that they've been defrauded by a bank, in other words, say, for example, a signature has been forged by the bank, a bank account has been opened fraudulently by the bank, the first thing they do is they phone the police, don't they?
Yes, and the police, when have the police, since I was the PCC of Thames Valley, when have the police taken on a major banking fraud? And the answer is they haven't. They say, oh, send it to Action Fraud, which is a call centre in Scotland, which probably does nothing with it. But actually, I gather, and I haven't seen it, but other people have, there is evidence that Action Fraud has been told not to deal with banking fraud. So every banking fraud, the Crown Prosecution Service won't deal with it. The Financial Conduct Authority won't deal with it. The SF Serious Fraud Office hasn't dealt with it. They've got a major case at the moment that I hope they are going to do something about. So all the the regulatory authorities that should deal with fraud shrug their shoulders, say, send it to a call centre in Glasgow where they know perfectly well nothing will be done. And fraud, major fraud, is simply regarded as a civil matter. And it goes up in front of civil courts. And what I can tell you is that there are certain judges that take on these cases. They don't listen to the evidence properly. They always side with the bank. And if you go up in front of a civil court, you haven't a hope on a fraud case these days. And I would point out that fraud is not a civil matter. It is a criminal matter. It should go through the criminal courts.
Can you name any of these judges?
No, I'm not going to name judges. No.
All right, well, can you tell us a bit about this serious fraud office case then? So if anyone else has been defrauded in this way, that they could maybe take advantage of it and provide evidence.
Well, I don't even know if the Serious Fraud Office are actually going to investigate this case properly. They've got it. They have the detail of it, and I hope they do something about it. I think if they do, it'll be a game changer.
So you can't say anything about that case?
No, I don't think I can, not when the Serious Fraud Office is in the middle of its investigation, or is meant to be in the middle of an investigation.
Now, we've recently had a panorama programme about Lloyd's in Bristol, the BSU, that used to be on Castle Park. That actual office was in the section which was right next to that used as the vaults by the Bank of England in the southwest, on Castle Park. At Castle Park, of course, underneath there, it's almost like a honeycomb, from because that's where the old castle used to be, which was demolished after the Civil War, I believe. But that specific programme, I believe you were actually interviewed for it, but you never appeared on it. Why?
Well, it was the most extraordinary business. The producers and directors of it set the programme up. They came down here. I had them in my house, I think, for about 5 or 6 hours. I was interviewed for about 3 hours by somebody Steve Brady did the interview. All went very well until the BBC lawyer got involved, one particular lawyer, and he insisted that I should be taken out completely, and there was no real reason for doing that whatsoever. And the bank was then allowed this huge right of reply. And I have to say that the people involved in the BBC were incandescently cross about the behaviour within the BBC system to try and stop the programme going out in the form they wanted it to go out.
Well, maybe you can share with us now some of those facts. And of course, this lawyer should at least allow the facts to be shared with the public, even if it is contentious, and even if they maybe are afraid of them being taken to court by Lloyd's, they can fight that case. The BBC are able to do that. Any decent media organisation does. So can you just share with us now the sorts of points that you were making that the BBC then cut out of the documentary?
Well, I think the points we were making is there had been an absolute deliberate effort by certain banks to take out companies, deliberately bankrupt the companies that were actually doing quite well, if not very well, some of the companies, to steal their assets. And they were doing so through what were actually through criminal fraud, and they've never been held to account for it. In the same way that the Lloyd's HBOS Reading case went. And the effort that was made to stop the HBOS Reading case was quite extraordinary. The fact that the case went in the entire 2 months or 2.5 months or whatever it was, it went through the court. Lloyd's denied throughout that court case that a fraud had taken place. And it wasn't until the jury returned its verdict that Lloyd's put up their hands and said, oh, well, maybe a fraud had been committed. But they protected furiously what went on out of Bristol and elsewhere.
For anybody that may be aware of this, or maybe even not necessarily aware of the depth of this fraud, what have you got to say to anyone to warn them about the sorts of things that you mustn't do to get caught by banks in this manner? Because you were implying earlier on that this is still going on.
Well, they're still pursuing people who they should have paid back. I don't know if they're actually initiating these frauds still. That I don't have any evidence. But there is a huge number of people in the Bristol area. And, of course, the tentacles from Bristol spread throughout the country. It wasn't just in Bristol this was going on. It was right across the whole south of England and Wales. There are groups getting together, but it's very difficult to fight a court case if you've had all your money taken away from you. And they've pursued people, they've removed their houses, their businesses, and everything. And very often, the guarantees are that the bank has said exist are dodgy, to put it mildly. And but when you're up against the bank's lawyers, and you're a private individual or a small or medium-sized company, it is very difficult to fight back. And you have a judiciary that seems to be totally in the pocket of our banks sometimes, our civil judiciary.
Yeah, for business people, what advice have you got to avoid being caught up in these kind of spider's webs of fraud?
Well, I think the notice is a bit late to warn them. I mean, it all took place really, a few years ago, though the debts have still been pursued. Be very, very careful which bank you borrow money from, I think, and make absolutely certain that you haven't had and asked the bank whether bank accounts have been opened in your name that you're not aware of,
Well,
and make.
that is not the sort of question that you would think to ask, is it? Have you been
No.
opening bank accounts in my name that I'm not aware of?
Well, it's quite extraordinary, yes. And I would like there should have been a proper government investigation into what went on. But I think the government, successive governments, have been so keen not to rock the boat with the banks. They've lent them so much money or given them so much money that they have basically had a free hand to do what they'd wanted to do.
Well, it sounds to me like you're saying that even with maybe new frauds which are invented, fraud is no longer a criminal offence in Britain.
Doesn't seem to be.
So, what's the implication of that? That's almost as if Britain is becoming the fraud a fraud capital, that any fraudster can come here and merrily ply their craft to the expense of the community.
Yes, I mean it is extraordinary. I think a few minor local frauds the police investigate. But I mean, the only reason really for the existence of the City of London Police was to examine fraud. They don't even do it today. When did the City of London last take on a major fraud? The answer is not for years, as far as I can see. The Metropolitan Police, I don't think we have that pool of skilled police officers who have any idea of banking or how to take on a major fraud that emanates out of the banking system. The system is very, very weak. And those regulatory authorities that should be doing something about it, National Crime Agency, Financial Conduct Authority, the Bank of England, basically look the other way and will do anything to support the bank.
Well, you mentioned the City of London there. This is an interesting thing we've got here in Britain, which even the monarch apparently has to write to them beforehand if he wants to visit the City of London. It's almost like a country within a country. The other thing here, of course, is that the legal profession. So, what sort of networks are there? Because it seems clear to me that the banking industry is so powerful in this country, it's able to slowly but surely change the judiciary and even pressurise the press, the media, the National London media, into being almost part of a protection racket.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, if you actually look how much our major banks, notably Lloyds, spend on lawyers a year, it is a vast sum. And the money is hoovered up by about four or five of the major legal companies in London. And one of the pernicious things that I've seen on a few occasions is that when somebody actually gets lawyers on their behalf to try and take on a bank, and one or two people even tried to do had offers of people to do it pro bono because they haven't got any money themselves, that smaller legal company will be lent upon by the big ones, and they pull out usually, and this is a real problem. There is a very nasty little network there.
Well, it's talking about, that sounds to me like a perversion of the course of justice. These again seem to be even bigger offences in themselves. You're describing a kind of lawless nation.
Yes, I think, we always used to pride ourselves on being a very honest country. I think that went out of the window after Big Bang, and things went realized that they could get away with these sort of
But
crimes.
that's back to Margaret Thatcher. I think it was
Oh,
about
yes,
91,
yeah.
1991, isn't it? That's a long time ago.
It's a long, long time ago, and I think it didn't happen straight away. It worked its way up slowly through the system. But I think by the middle of 2005, 2006, they had really discovered that they could get away with practically anything. And I think they have. And I think, we have a very unfortunately corrupt system today, and it's very worrying.
Well, it certainly is. The banks, of course, if they were here with us, they would say that we are self-regulating through the, I think, isn't it, the Financial Services Authority, at their own regulator.
Yeah, yes, and whose pocket are they in? I mean, I took this to Andrew Bailey, who ran. I had meetings with him. I had the correspondence. We had one-to-one meeting on this, and he demanded that every single one of these cases go to him personally. Not one single one came out.
Now he's the governor of the Bank of England.
Exactly.
So this is a little bit worrying. It does look like the central banks are in charge. Ultimately, I'd like to hear some names from you, names of judges
No,
who have
I can't give names because that would give them ammunition to have a go at me personally. So I won't go through names because I don't want to have the business of having to
It
protect
helps
myself.
if people have got one of these judges up in front of them. They can say, well, we can, they can use
Yes,
legal
and
arguments against them.
they have done on several occasions. And of course, the great strength that those people have is if you've been bankrupted, they can't really take any more money away from you.
Well, that is true. If people want to follow this sort of thing, are there any of the national newspapers, the FT, etc., that will cover it or not?
The FT did cover it for a bit. Unfortunately, the journalist was moved on. The Telegraph has never touched it with a barge pole because they were owned by Lloyd's. One or two reporters in the Daily Mail have tried to take it through. The Guardian on one or two has. One or two, I have to say, been clearly got at. It is extraordinary. They've had the story and it's been sat upon.
So what do you put this network down to? Who are they?
Well, I'm afraid, it is the very powerful banks who own so much. I mean, practically every newspaper is owned by a bank or has a major overdraft with a bank.
Yeah, they certainly do. I know they're not very profitable. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, well, I totally have to trust my bank for absolutely everything, and you're telling me they may be a bunch of criminals.
Well, I think for your current account, and I still bank with one of the banks that was undoubtedly involved, some of the money I have are not very large, not worth defrauding. But it was companies and also, especially and also agricultural businesses, farmers right across, Wales and places. A lot of people lost that.
Yeah, but hang on, you haven't really answered my question. You've sh shown that these banks are criminal, and yet we completely have to trust them when it comes to our bank accounts, don't we?
Yes, I mean, I and you are not worth defrauding.
Yes, but I mean, you don't want to have all that trust in the hands of those people. I mean, we're talking here about, aren't we, trillions of pounds of money, maybe not all businesses, but in people's hands from day to day. We're totally beholden to these banks, and they completely decide. So, for example, when we go over to waving our card in front of a machine, in order, there's been no public debate about that. The banks have just told us that's what you're going to do, and you're telling me these people
Yes,
at
I
the
mean,
top are
I
criminals.
think you ought to keep an eye on your bank account, but the sums of money going through most people's bank accounts are very trivial. By banking standards, they may not be trivial to you at all. And on the whole, I think that day-to-day low-level banking is not a problem.
Okay, well, look, let's hope not, because at some point they
I hope so, yes.
might do something with it. You're telling me, really, that these people in charge of this are not trustworthy. Okay, so finally, Anthony, what can we do? Is there anything we can do with this about this?
Yes, I mean, I think a complaint to your MP, at least he can't say he hasn't been told about it. and practically every MP in the country has been told about it, I think. And there is a central organisation that's trying to do something about it, the Transparency Task Force. And they've been onto this for quite a time, and it really was a one-man band to start with. It's getting more power, and I think it sits on the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Banking. So I think the word is going out. I mean, I've spoken, you know, in parliamentary meetings, in committee rooms in the Houses of Parliament on about five or six occasions now. And everybody nods and agrees, and then I'm afraid very little is done about it. Don't rock the boat, old boy.
Well, hang on, the boat needs to be rocked, doesn't it? So you're
it
saying really
it.
Maybe the victory has already been won. I mean, I'm not sure, but you can tell me if it has or hasn't, in that you don't think that these frauds are taking place anymore.
Well, I think in the old days, the banking had a very good reputation. It has a rotten reputation today.
What about people if they're interested in following these sorts of cases, or if maybe they feel that they or a friend or relative has been defrauded in this way? Is there anything they can do?
Well, I think the Transparency Task Force is doing a very good job trying to bring these things to public attention. But you haven't got the money to take it to court. I mean, since the HBOS Lloyds Reading frauds went through the court, only one major fraud has gone through the criminal courts that I'm aware of. And that was a fraud of about 10 or 12 million. Crown Prosecution Service wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. It had to be privately prosecuted. And luckily the people, they had American, I think, owners at the end of it, had the money to prosecute it. And the judge, and it was prosecuted privately in a criminal court. And the man involved went to jail. I think he got 11 years. And the judge in the criminal court said, why on earth did this have to be prosecuted privately?
You know what? This comes down to the Crown Prosecution Service, doesn't it, ultimately?
A lot of it does. Or, well, if the police won't do anything about it, you know, private individuals, unless they got a lot of money, are very pressed to do it. What was interesting, the man in that case, I don't know if he's still in jail or not, but he had power of attorney over a number of other estates, all of which disappeared, and they made that £12 million look like peanuts. I can name the man who went to prisoner, Stephen David Jones was his name.
Can you just explain in a nutshell what he did?
I did speak to the lawyer involved. I went to London and had a meeting with him. But basically, he just did a major fraud over property, against some individuals who were actually part of an American company, and they had the money, said, to take it to court. A private prosecution. Most people, if they've been bankrupted, don't have any money to do that.
So how do you get into this group or this gang that's able to get away with fraud? How do you get in?
Be a senior banker, I'd have thought.
The old blue bloods. Anyway, okay, Anthony Stansfield, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Right, okay.